drop. It's a download here on 720 WGN. It's time to reload this week's news. 312-981-7200. Biggest stories. Overreported, underreported, winners, losers. What story sucked you down the rabbit hole, and which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from now?
A thousand years from now. Like the Catholic Church always thinks, what will it mean a thousand years
What
from
will
now?
It mean? Aaron Freeman is in studio with us tonight, our old pal. Aaron, how are you, buddy?
Best day of my life.
All right, tell me.
Я везю тебя, это лучший день в моей жизни. It's the Russian. That's... When I see you, it's the best day of my life.
Give us, what are you working on these days?
I am artist in residence for the Chicago Council on Science and Technology.
Awesome.
And I'm starting a new podcast with my buddy Peggy Mason from the UFC for the Chicago Society for Neuroscience, Brain Buddies Podcast.
Brain Buddies.
Brain
podcast.
Buddies.
When's it going to be out?
We're going to probably launch at the end of the month.
All right. Brain Buddies. Our brain buddy as well in studio tonight, Ken Davis. Ken, how are you,
Hi.
My friend?
I'm okay.
Yeah. He's the host of
Chicago. How can I compete with that?
Chicago
I host
Newsroom.
A cable TV show, and I'm a gardener.
He's the host
but
of Chicago Newsroom.
You're the sage of the city, my brother.
Can TV here in Chicago. All right, guys. It's good to have you guys
the
back.
The new studs turkle.
Yeah, right? There you go. All right, so let's get into this. So we got a lot to talk about, but I think we all agree that the biggest story this week, of course, is the healthcare vote in the House.
Yep.
You know, we were talking about it before, and it's really just sort of trying to understand where we are when it comes to the energy and I guess just overall how the country views this, because I'm a little bit confused myself on whether or not this was good, this was bad, this is terrible, the world's going to blow up, to save the world. Like, there's so much going on right now, and it's really falling on partisan lines, but I'm hoping that you guys can help me out. Was this a good thing for our country?
Was what a good thing for the country?
The House vote? Yeah.
In which country are we talking about here? Are we talking about the people who live in the cities, the ones who like, quote, Aeschylus and Richard Feynman? Are we talking about which America are we talking about here?
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the point, right?
It was good for one of the Americas, yeah.
Yeah, one of the many Americas.
Not the one that I live in, but you know, it was good for one of them. Hey, you know, I've been thinking about this all day, trying to figure out how to express this, and you come back to... Elections have consequences.
That's true.
I tell you? The Republicans won. They won big. How they won is a subject for another show. And they are now using the power that the American people gave them to restructure America in their image. And they're doing it very, very well.
And to be fair, they ran on this concept. I mean, this was what the president, they said front, this is the number one priority. Right. This is what we're going to do.
I completely disagree with them, but I understand that elections have consequences.
Aaron, where do you stand on this?
Well, I mean, it is certainly true that elections have consequences. It is certainly true. But I must say that what I keep thinking about is your old improv group, Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
I remember how much I enjoyed watching Karl Rove suffer when Obama was reelected. I remember I loved that so much. And I totally get it. They are, because look, politics, we're Chicagoans, politics is blood sport.
That's right.
And it really is. It really is blood sport. And I talked to my buddy, the evolutionary biologist, Robert Trivers. And you know, when he talked about the membership. It's team membership. It's whatever Team Obama did. The job of Team Rump is to destroy. And that is the way the horrible game gets played. And, of course, as the Africans say, when elephants fight, it's the grass that suffers. So we, the grass, are just sitting here watching.
I mean, Ken, there's something to that. I mean, is this really just – I mean, we've heard a lot about legacy, but is this really sort of – we're getting back at Obama for the way that he governed for 8 years, and we're going to take that from him, even if it's –
Having brown skin, doggone it.
Doggone it.
Obamacare was nothing more than Romney care, right? The Republicans wrote it. It was a Republican plan. They didn't like it because they didn't like Obama.
Right.
They vowed they would get rid of it. They're going to get rid of it one way or another. And I will just say right now that I think that I spend a lot of time like other people in my tribe watching MSNBC. And more I am just laughing at it because I'm watching these whistling past the graveyard hosts sitting there saying, don't worry about a thing, folks. It's going to go to the Senate. The Senate's going to kill it. It ain't going to happen. They're wrong. They were wrong 2 weeks ago when they were saying it wouldn't get through the House. And what they are not understanding is that, and this to me is the biggest story of the week. The story of the week is the awakening of the Trump administration. We are seeing these guys now. The wheels are on the road. This thing is moving forward.
Right. They had a little sputters and some quick breaks and emergency breaks.
Get a few people out of the way. But President Pence is now fully in charge of the country, and he is nothing if he's not a very gifted legislator and an LBJ of the right. So I think it's going to go through the Senate. I think that the Senate is going to come around. They're going to pass it. And we are going to be in a post-Obamacare world in a very short period
of time. Okay, let me ask you guys this. And this is, let's get philosophical here, because I
love philosophy.
You love it. That's why you're here. I honestly think about it, and I think about the question of whether or not we believe as a people, especially in this country, that healthcare is a human right. That it's a right to, and that you have to, a federal government has to provide it to you. That seems to be at the core of this whole thing when you talk about politics and conservatives or liberals, that there will be more conservatives that don't believe it's a right and they think that it's something that's earned. And there are more liberals that say, no, it's a right. We should cover everybody. So where do we stand? I mean, does that have to be sort of reconciled before we even start moving forward on bills and senates, and
so the really
committees?
Amazing thing about this for me of late, my wife and I have been lying in bed for the last couple of weeks watching Call the Midwife. You know the series?
Yeah.
It's a series about a bunch of nuns and midwives in the 1950s. And you remember that people in the UK and in Europe have taken healthcare for granted as a human right since before even I was born. And I'm older than dirt. This is a debate that has been done over, finished
yeah,
with, even
right.
like Maggie Thatcher, the most crypto-fascist group you could possibly imagine, never even thinks about. Not Marine Le Pen. None of them. They don't even talk about. We're done with this.
Yeah, we've had that argument.
Yeah, right. I mean, it doesn't seem to require a massive amount of deep intellectual thought to conclude that a healthy, well-educated populace is a better one. It's good. Yeah, it's kind of.
So why are we having this conversation? Why is it just sort of like an anti-European sort of, you know, we're the USA,
oh, no.
we don't do that? Why are we having this conversation?
It's the conversation that's been going on since the founding. I mean, it's just there are people who believe that, you know, his name just escaped me, but the former congressman from Illinois who said, you know, it's not my job to pay for your health insurance, right? And Neil Steinberg today comes back and says, maybe you just don't even understand the concept of what health insurance
is.
Joe Walsh, right. But I think that it really does come down to, you phrase it as, is healthcare a right? Should the government provide it? I think the question is a little bit more like, isn't healthcare something that we should all just have? I mean, isn't good healthcare something that you want to call it a right? It's something that should just exist, and we should be doing everything in our power to make it work as best as we can,
but
and not turn it over to three or four large companies whose profit margin works. Is antithetical to the idea of providing good service.
But see, that is the point. I mean, the healthcare industry is the third most profitable industry in the country, and they have an absolute fiduciary responsibility to their stockholders, most of whom are a micro minority of the population, but they have this fiduciary responsibility. For example, the idea that it is illegal for Medicare to negotiate lower drug prices. Right. Now, what? talk about anti-capitalist. That's command economy. Because they own, you can buy Congress people.
It's also illegal for the federal government to have a searchable database on guns.
Yes, which I just learned today. Yeah, which is really. Yeah.
Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation on the biggest story of the week, of course, healthcare. We continue it here. We're reloading the news. We are 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Aaron Freeman, Ken Davis in studio. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. 815 says, we have a responsibility to help those who are in need, but not the right. We shouldn't have to pay for bad choices or reckless behavior. People should be responsible for themselves. Otherwise, it'll always be an unfair system. But you, I mean, you hear a lot of that. I mean, this, yeah. It seems to me like that's a, again, that's a philosophical concept. This idea: why should I pay for other people to live off the hog?
You know, it's an interesting notion. It's an interesting thing. This notion of personal responsibility. Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky won the 1992 Nobel Prize in Economics for proving that Adam Smith was wrong. Right. So Adam Smith says we are rational animals, rational actors making informed decisions in pursuit of hedonic gratification. What Kahneman and Tversky proved was that we are rational animals making informed. Oh, look, something shiny.
look, a squirrel.
Yeah, that is not. It is simply not true. It is. It's demonstrably, empirically, we are not. Look, every one of us, every single one of us knows that we will make different decisions and react to the world differently depending on whether or not we've eaten.
Right.
Everybody knows. There's no debate about that.
Great.
Depending on whether and what we've eaten. No debate. And that's to say nothing about the myriad microbes and parasites that infest our intestinal biome, which wasn't even a word 10 years ago.
And that was before Twitter.
And that was even before Twitter. I mean, the factors that go, and that's not even to say, that's not even a bother. The fact that people with huge PhDs are paid gigantic amounts of money to fool us, yeah. to make us think right. that up is down and down is up. So the idea of free will and rational choice is it just betrays a lack of innumeracy and just a lack of thinking about it. Because again, if you just think about yourself, you know that you are dependent on what you eat.
Let me ask you this, Ken. Yes. This all week I've been sort of inundated from my social media feeds about what we know right. about this. Oh, watch out for pre-existing conditions. This mm-hmm. is how, they removed this from the website. Mm-hmm. Oh, they didn't tell you this, all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. right? And it makes you wonder because, we've already lived through this kind of thing when we heard about death panels and mm-hmm. you can't see your own doctor and the way that conservative, people on pundits and others said that Obamacare was going to sure. destroy the world. The question I have is, what is in this bill? What is it that fundamentally changes Obamacare to the American Health Care
Act? I would suggest that you ask the Republicans who voted for it yesterday because they didn't read it either. So there's probably four people in America who know what's in the thing.
Is it just as boils down to the fact that we just give more power to the insurance companies to do whatever they want?
Well, you asked us to prepare a list of winners and losers right. for the program tonight. And I, being the good citizen
yeah,
that
you
I
did,
am,
you did
prepared
your work.
My
right.
work. And I came up with my winner was the insurance industry.
Right.
Because, I mean, they got this bill gave them everything they ever wanted. They got all their power back to tell you when and how you're going to get paid for whatever, if it's pre-existing conditions, if it's access to testing, whatever it is, diagnostics, the insurance companies are back in charge, which is exactly what they want.
Now, Aaron, I would say another winner, and I know this is so painfully generic, is the rich. In the way that the tax cut,
yeah, win.
Sorry, I didn't mean that.
That's the house.
Those are my people. Those are my homies.
Well, now the question I have is just at the end of the day. I mean, the insurance companies, were kind of told by the Obamacare that there's some things they can do and they can't do, and that's maybe been stripped away. I'm not even sure. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, though, the insurance companies always kind of do what they want to do, and they, sure. like you said, they've been profitable. And the second part of this, I guess the winners, is that there is a monster tax cut because it was a tax on people right. in a certain tax bracket to afford Obamacare.
Right.
Is that at the end of the day, is that really what this is about? The idea that Trump gave back his buddies?
I think that's too simplistic. I think the rich, that's just kind of like in a casino, that's the house, right? The house yeah. always wins.
Right, right.
So no matter what, the rich will always get richer. And that's not even my concern at this point. My concern is that what we were talking about before, that the insurance industry is now clearly in control once again of doctors and their decisions and the decision making that gets that you have to
right.
you don't get to make this choice.
I guess that's a good point.
And what Obamacare did was it struck this deal with the insurance industry that I think they probably always regretted, that said we are going to take some of those decisions away, like pre-existing and all the rest of it. We're all familiar with the litany, as you say, it's right. in all of our media feeds. And I think that the insurance companies weren't too happy about that. And they started pulling the thread that unraveled this stuff by pulling out of markets. And of course, there was rationale for that, but they were not looking to be part of the solution. They were actually glad to be part of the problem.
Far be it from me to defend the insurance industry. But let me just say...
And now, to defend the insurance industry.
In the words of our beloved Rahm Emanuel, the insurance companies are going to make out like bandits because they're going to get so many new customers.
Right.
And it really did not happen that there were many fewer young people signed up than the administration thought, so that there was a smaller pool of premiums.
So the predictions were off.
Yeah, They weren't able to sell it. You know, I can understand it because I was 21 and immortal myself once. Because when you're 21,
I don't want insurance.
Yeah, what do I need?
I need a new cell phone.
I'll never get sick. What are you talking about? There's an app. If I break my leg, I'm getting an app. I'm going to download it from the iTunes store. I'm good.
You know, you and I once used to work over at that public radio place, and there was this woman, Donna, who worked there. And when I was 32, I think it was, she came over and said, "It's time for you to go downstairs and fill out your applications for your pension." And I just laughed and I said, "Lady, I will never need a pension because when I'm 65, I'll have people paying me for my opinion." And now I'm 67 and nobody's paying me for my opinion. So thank heavens for Donna because I filled out the paperwork and I'm okay.
Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman, we're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break to get tonight's news from Rob Martyr and we'll come back.
We solved this.
Well, we'll move on. I still got my winner.
We're going to do winners. Okay. We'll do Aaron's winner.
I'm keeping score up here, by the way.
We're keeping score. Losers, of course, overreported and underreported. Coming up here, we're reloading. Stay with us.
I don't have any. They're,
we got broken headphones. Right, we'll figure it out. Aaron Freeman, Ken Davis studio. We're reloading this week's news. Sans
neither
headphones.
Of us have headphones.
No, you don't need them anymore.
No headphones.
That's right. We're riding
we're going
blind.
Commando here.
That's right. 312.
I just want you to know the show continued without you.
That's right.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're reloading this week's news. We just did the biggest story. Ken had his winner. Let's go to Aaron. Aaron, what do you got for winners this week?
Biggest winner this year, the first chink in the armor of the military-industrial complex. Elon Musk and SpaceX launched the first non-United Launch Alliance spy satellite.
Really?
Yes.
Yes.
NRO 76, I believe it was NRO some number, but it was the first time that because our little buddies at Boeing and Lockheed and Raytheon had a monopoly on the launching of spy satellites. And for this week, our buddy Elon, Mr. Let's Go to Mars.
Here's my question on
this.
Elon Musk, and he's always been this rogue sort of, I'm going to break that up.
Yep.
But doesn't he just add to it? Doesn't he become the fourth company? Like, it's not like,
well,
you know.
Well, and so there is that.
He's a billionaire, right?
Well, you know, that's true. I mean, and certainly, since I spent 18 months being completely wrong about the election, I have learned a lot of humility, and I really try to avoid predictions, especially about the future. But I can only say that this week he wins. This week, the monopoly of the United Launch Alliance was broken.
He wins.
And it gives hope.
Well, do you think the things that he's done, the reusable rockets, the launching from, you know, landing him on a barge in the middle of the ocean. It's amazing stuff.
And as I say, I live in Highland Park. Tesla.
Yes.
There's a law that you have to have one. We're getting away with
it. You have two of them now, right?
Well, no, I mean, in Lake Forest, you have to have two. You only have to have one in Highland Park now. But, you know, if you leave the Republicans in there long enough, the two Tesla requirement will be written into the code.
But I'm surprised the Republicans aren't making you drive coal vehicles.
Well, that may come
coal tender. in the back.
Well, that's why Musk is going along with Trump, right, because he wants to make
sure.
All
right, let's keep going. Let's go. Yes. Let's do. We got through the winners. Let's go to losers. Ken, what do you got for losers?
My loser for the week, Mr. Kaufman, is the Thompson Center.
Yeah, me too. That's
really.
Yeah,
yeah.
I got it right here.
Bill Ruther did a beautiful piece in the Tribune today. I don't know if you've seen it, but he says that the governor says that they can get maybe $300 million for it. Alex Holt, the budget director, just took them apart in this story, saying you don't even understand basically how taxing works, because they were saying the city could get so much more tax if it was it was on the rolls. It's worth reading. But the real question is the whole thing about what's going to go there. And there are zoning questions. Some people have proposed like the tallest skyscraper in Chicago and blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. But there's such a fear that what'll happen is this building will just get abandoned. And imagine what's worse than the Thompson Center now, the empty Thompson Center 5 years from now with a bunch of broken windows in it.
It's
right?
A lot of windows. Yeah,
yeah. And I mean that's a real serious concern. Yeah. If somebody buys that thing, they've got to tear it down and clear it away. And then there's just the real question of the preservationists are saying, this is a beautiful piece of modernist architecture. It's like there are a few things that I'm more torn on than this. I really don't want to see that building get torn down, but I just don't see how it could be saved at this point.
I mean, Aaron, do you
have... I love the Thompson Center. I loved back in the old days when it had its own clouds. It's a little atmosphere, biosphere,
right,
Chicago.
Right.
That was
biosphere,
really fun.
Right.
I know, it was
right.
Really fun.
You almost had to dress like a biosphere.
Because of the
rain. And
I mean, it really is a very problematic architectural structure, I know. But see, I'm an old guy, so I remember when it was built.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I have an emotional attachment to it, whether it's any good or not.
Absolutely.
I still have an emotional attachment to it. It really is a terrible building and non-functional. But I remember when it was first made, and I remembered Jim Thompson.
Two things on this building that I find interesting. One, the money, as you mentioned in the article, but the you can make an argument. We're hemorrhaging $11 million a day at the state. To sell off a building for $300 million or what you think you're going to get, it doesn't come close to anything.
No.
So
no.
It's really just trying to get rid of an asset or an eyesore that the state doesn't want to deal with.
And by the way, just sometime this evening, I mean in the last few hours, apparently the governor has said, hey, I'll give you a deal. We'll give all the proceeds to Chicago Public Schools. So that could be somewhere between $200 million, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you just vetoed $215 million a year. So maybe that would be like 1 year of money that you vetoed, Mr. Governor.
Well, the second,
and they would cut the school budget by that much anyway
for that
year.
Right.
The second part about this, too, is the mayor's involvement. The mayor doesn't want the building to be sold if the people who buy it or develop it mess with the L. Because the L is right there, and it's about the subway there. They got it's like a hub right there,
as
Clark
a blue
Lake,
line
all that
writer,
stuff. Right.
I can certainly understand.
So
that.
There's and in a way, I mean, Mike Fouché was on a Wednesday saying that kind of kills the deal because there's no one's going to come in and say, "Oh, I can't. I have to avoid all of this happening here." It
Especially
really limits
you
what you can do with
sink
it.
Sink caissons in that area or something. I mean, it's a big footprint inside the building, and somebody was talking about trying to encapsulate it, with concrete or something, but. It's a big deal, and you can't reroute the blue line tubes around the building, so I don't know how you do it without, it's
magical Chicago dust.
Right. Oh, what?
You sprinkle a little magical green dust.
I forgot we can use that station underneath the O'Hare connector station that Mayor Daley built for $250 million.
That's sitting there doing nothing.
There's always a solution.
I would almost put into losers as well. I mean, the Thompson Center is, the state of Illinois taxpayers, people live here only in the sense that this is what we're debating. Whether or not we're going to sell this building when we still, after so many days, don't have a budget, we don't know where we're going. It's almost like they just said, we're never going to fix that. So let's figure out what to do with the glassy building. Something shiny. Seeing it on the front page and seeing it sort of go, that you almost become resentful as a citizen in Illinois that there's any other state news besides fixing the budget. Yeah, and it seems to me when politicians move off of it, and we've seen that a little bit in the last couple months into other topics, I cringe and I'm like, you know what, get back to work.
You know, when Pritzker becomes governor, he could maybe get the family to turn it into a hotel and casino. I mean, I think that would be the answer.
I think it would just be a fine bedroom for Jay. Just let him have his little room. Yeah, you know.
I'm sorry, I like the food court. Okay.
There's a good Arby's in that food court. Right. Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman, we're reloading this week's news. We'll come back. We'll do some overreported and underreported, and we'll continue the conversation here. Reloading this week's news if you want to get in on it. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Good track, Beats by Zim. Aaron Freeman, Ken Davis in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. Aaron, of course, artist in residence for the Chicago Council on Science Technology. He's also the co-host of the podcast Brain Buddies, which we will see coming up here in the next month.
Well, along with Peggy Mason, my dearest beloved.
There you go. And Ken Davis, the host of Chicago Newsroom, which can be seen on CAN TV, weekly roundup of Chicago news. As I asked you, when does it air? You're like, all the time.
Yeah, but you know, just Google Chicago Newsroom and you can watch it anytime you want. That's as simple as that.
Right? That's the answer I give anytime somebody comes on the show. Is like, can I give my website? No, people know how to Google. Right. They're gonna figure it out.
It's true. But let us just note that Ken is here with a newspaper, an actual paper. You hear this paper?
The Tribune building with my Sun Times under my arm.
I love paper, primitive form of data storage, popular late 20th century Earth. I knew it. Right?
This newspaper is like 120 kilobytes of storage.
There.
All right, Ken, you want to start us off? Let's do overreported and underreported. What do you got for overreported?
Well, I kind of skipped overreported because obviously everything this week was one of those weeks where it was like drinking from, you know, I don't know, the Buckingham Fountain or something.
Well, it's kind of funny
everything
because
everything was being reported all the time.
I will say this: the way that the sort of dichotomy of the week turned out, it was the House stuff didn't happen till Thursday.
Yeah,
there was a whole week of like it wasn't until Tuesday. Like they might vote on healthcare.
Yeah,
like, it was interesting. They like if you look back, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they're talking about my overreported is Obama's speech on Wall Street.
Yes,
the 400,000 where it was just like over and over and over, and I'm like, yeah, do you know what? I think that's just, I don't know. Like, are we going to do that every time?
Every time he speaks.
I mean,
let's report on the first time he speaks to a crowd that is not handpicked beforehand.
Yeah. And then, you know, I do think that there was some news that was non-healthcare that came out this week, but I will say overreported to me. Yeah, I thought that was the 400,000 speech. I thought that I know this is weird because it actually is my rabbit hole story too. Mm. But Trump's fascination with Andrew Jackson. That got really weird. Did it not get weird? Like at the beginning of the week, that's all he was talking about. And he was like,
the Civil War thing.
Yeah.
This was just
this past Sunday is when that all started, where he was on and he walked off the set in the CBS Face the Nation. Yeah, that was the beginning of this week. That's what blows my mind when you think about President Trump and the news that comes out of the White House is it can turn like that. But it feels like that was a month ago. That was this week.
He provides us with such a compendium of wonderful stories, doesn't he?
He does.
Certainly, that's my overreported story is Rump. It's silliness. I mean, he's highly entertaining, but of little substance.
You know, I thought it was a lot worse in the last 2 months. Like this first 2-3 months, I thought it was like I couldn't even handle it anymore. It was just every day there was something on Trump. I thought in the last couple of weeks it slowed down. I thought, and it might be the same concept you're talking about, Ken, where it feels like the wheels are on the road.
Yeah.
You know, he's not sputtering as much. He's kind of except for today, but he's kind of getting away from social media. He's not doing as much on Twitter. He's focusing himself.
I think that the adults have figured this out. You take him and you sit him in a nice big comfy chair and you surround him with a lot of people telling him, Mr. President, you are the greatest president ever. And he says, yes, I am. Thank you. Here, Mr. President, sign this. He doesn't know what it is. He signs it. I think they've got it figured out that's all you need to do. Mm-hmm. But I digress.
But I do wanted to say that, you know, as a matter of a couple of matters of hopeful, of optimism, a couple of reasons for optimism. In the big picture, the great cell biologist Lewis Thomas says that one of the reasons
Name
that we...
dropper.
I didn't say it.
Cellular biologist name dropper.
It's a smart observation right. that I didn't make, and I do not want to be accused.
And you want of, credit?
I, yes, I don't want to be
good,
accused.
That's a good bunch of scientists who are listening right. up. Oh, good, he attributed.
Oh, good. I'm just saying. Well, look, I work for C2ST. You have to attribute, or else everybody beats you up and yells at you. But what he says is that the reason, one of the reasons that things seem can often seem so off the rails and in such bad shape here. Is that as evolution counts time, we humans just crawled out of the trees and are trying to figure out what to do with the miracles of our opposable thumbs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's only been in the last 600 years that we've stopped ritual human sacrifice. It's only been in the last 250 years that we've stopped chattel slavery. Yeah. Yeah. It's only been in my life. When I was born, interracial marriages were illegal. There was no such a thing mm-hmm. as gay rights, mm-hmm. which is one of the other points I want to make that about you had mentioned some pessimism about the right wing taking over. And I could point out that if you ask most people, what's the right-wing TV news network, they will say Fox News. Mm-hmm. Fox News, if Fox News of 2017 had existed in 1967, it would have been the hippie TV news station. They got women, they got Negroes, they got Hispanic, things that were unheard of, unthinkable, crazy. But now, well, of course there's going to be, I mean, the big Breitbart right-wing spokesman is Milo Yiannopoulos, who's, what is he called, the world's most dangerous faggot. I mean, he's absolutely, they are so, the
right out of control, man.
No. I mean, that's him.
I know.
But I'm just saying, so that it is so much the progressive liberalism has won so hugely and overwhelmingly that even the most right wing dare not be inclusive.
You're right, and I do think there's something to be said about just it's only been. I mean, even in this case, you're talking about 50 years. Fox News in the 60s. Absolutely.
And we're still trying to figure out how to handle all of these news feeds. We are not evolutionarily equipped to handle this much. And I think all of us who are in this racket all have suffered from this feeling that you just get sometimes that my hard drive is full. Oh my God! I'm.
Although somebody said that somebody said you never get anybody under 30 talking about information overload.
Right.
Because for them, it's a playground. It's the information is a playground.
Natives.
To your point, we all get 1,440 minutes per day, period. That's it. Right. We get the same 1,440 minutes that the cavemen had. Okay? Same 1,440 minutes, but we have a tsunami of information that comes to us at an ever-increasing rate.
And it really is an amazing endorsement of the concept of evolution, that we've adapted so quickly. And the pace of adaptation is accelerating almost exponentially. So not this generation, but two generations from now, I can't even imagine what they're going to be dealing with. Yeah. We talk about automation. We talk about, cyborgism.
Sure.
This is a wonderful time to be alive, as my friend Aaron would say.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny. I was talking to my mom, my 90-year-old mother who's learning Spanish, but that if you'd have told her father that his grandson wouldn't know how to hunt, what's going to happen if that grocery store of yours doesn't have any food in it? Then what you going to do?
That's a great point.
The very idea of it.
Grandpa, it's Whole Foods.
There's going to be food. There's going to be a global system of bringing up watermelons from Guatemala in the winter.
And in time.
Yeah.
Strawberries are going to arrive just on the right day.
Right. It's inconceivable. Well, just if you'd have told him that his grandson would marry a white woman.
Well, yeah.
I was born the year after Emmett Till. I mean, our talk was not like be polite to the police. Our talk was like don't ever look at a white woman ever.
There was a book not too long ago, which I can't cite because unlike Aaron, I just don't have that capacity. But a famous author wrote a really good book a while back, the essence of which was everything changed the day Maersk figured out that you could take a trailer and take it off a truck and put it on a barge or put it on a ship and you could have containerization.
Yeah.
Containerization is what started whole ball.
We don't see it as much in the Midwest, but if you're out in the West Coast or East Coast and you go to Long Beach and you go up on that bridge and watch in the morning, and you will see something like that you don't think is humanly possible, the way that all the containers and shipping and ships are coming in and trucks are coming out. I mean, it is like a childhood's book come to life. life. Like the truck takes it. Like it's amazing. I've never seen anything like it. Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. We kind of didn't even get to underreported. We'll get
Are we done?
After the news. No, we'll keep going.
We got half an hour.
I thought we were getting
5 in the morning. No, you're at 5 in the morning. We're not done.
We're not even leaving at 9:30, okay? I'm staying here. I love this studio.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. We are reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. The great Ken Davis, the great Aaron Freeman in studio.
Wow.
That means old.
The wise.
You got to decode this.
The wise Ken Davis.
I know. And that's
the elder
worse.
Statesman,
sagacious.
Aaron Freeman.
Sagacious. Yeah. I like sagacious. I think of Ken as sagacious.
What happened to sexy and you know, amazing and stuff.
I'm not
hot.
Sure.
You're also a hot number.
Was there, really a time in Ken Davis's life where people were like, the sexy Ken Davis is in studio?
No, sure.
Yeah, right. All right, let's get to underreported. We did overreported. Let's get to underreported, and then we'll move to which story sucked us down the rabbit hole. What do you got?
Well,
for
actually, it's interesting. The two of us are very similar in our interests, because my underreported was the James Webb Space Telescope. That thing has been under construction since 1989. And just the last couple of days, it passed its curvature test, which was massive. I mean, they had to bring all these lasers in and the vibrations. It's an incredible story. But they have decided that the primary mirror is okay. It can launch. So now they have to pack it in something or other to keep it at minus 50 degrees Celsius or something and ship it out to California where it's going to get launched. And it's going to go 933,000 miles from the Earth. So there's a point, a sweet spot between the Earth and the Sun, I guess, where it stays synchronous with the Earth. And it's an amazing feat. You know, the Hubble telescope is only 340 miles above Earth. This is 930,000 miles away.
Wow.
They will never touch it again. No one will ever be able to go out and repair it or upgrade it or anything.
Yep.
But it's going to be able to look possibly for those planets that
amazing.
We're looking for.
It's
so anyway, that's
and,
my
know,
story.
So that's funny that because my least reported story was Cassini.
Yeah,
Cassini,
yeah.
Which made its great little dive into Saturn.
It
passed through one of the major rings, and it is on its little death march into Saturn. These little, you know, I always feel so warmly toward these little spacecraft.
What about the Mars rover, right?
Sojourner, little Sojourner. I mean, all these little doomed machines. What was that? The Disney movie.
Right.
What was it?
Wally.
Wally. Yeah, Wally. Oh, I mean, they're all
lovable robots.
Yeah, they're all like it. I guess we've always had that. When we were little kids, we had warning, Will Robinson.
Right.
There's always been kind of lovable
the sidekick robot. Right?
Yeah,
my friend Mickey has a cartoon on his refrigerator of the Mars rover. Just sitting there thinking to itself, I must have done something wrong. They don't like me. I thought they would have taken me home by now.
Although, let me just say this, my second most interesting and underreported story was that the Death Star's tri-beam laser actually took a step forward this week.
Did it?
They actually they found a way to take three different laser beams, pass them to a single point on a diamond, and have a single beam with almost the force of all three.
So may the fourth be with you, right?
On the week of the fourth,
wow.
The Death Star's tri-beam.
I was waiting for the pun, but no, this is real.
No, this is real. Oh, yeah. There really is.
Today, I had this earlier in the carryout. The idea that Stephen Hawking has said that it was 1,000 years that we had left on this planet. That's what he said last year.
Mm-hmm.
He said that we have 1,000. Today, he revised it to 100 years. And he said, you have 100 years, by my calculations, to colonize a different planet.
Right.
So, you know, the joke goes, you got a big joke. So the guy's at an astrophysics lecture, and the lecturer says, yes, in a billion years, the sun will
explode.
Go supernova and destroy the Earth. And the guy in the back goes, whoa, what did you say? What? I said that in a billion years, the sun will go supernova. I said, oh, I thought you said a million years.
That's exactly right. That's that is exact sentiment. That nobody cares that Stephen Hawking's like, we got 100 years
right,
left.
Nobody right, cares.
Nah, 100, yeah. At least it's not 50, right?
Right. That's right. Exactly.
Except that your children will be alive 100 years from now. So.
Hey, they say the first person to live 150 years has already been born.
Yes.
Really?
That's right.
I mean,
somebody says
yeah,
that,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Hey, they're always right.
Are we seeing, more the idea of that kicker story of like, and she's 100 years old. That's right. Not a kicker story anymore.
No.
That's like everybody lives to 100?
Yeah, I think
if
so.
If you get lucky, if you can avoid disease and accidents, you know.
Many of us baby boomers will probably live well into the hundreds, I think. And our next generation, 120, 130.
If we get the self-driving cars, I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would really rather text. Okay. I swear to God, I cannot. I should not be behind the wheel of a vehicle. I should not. I'm terrible. I'm horrible. And that was even before cell phones.
You know, I've often thought this. I love to walk along the lakefront like everybody else. And there's this one spot by the Chess Pavilion, by the North Avenue.
Where
Fullerton, now they've rebuilt it. Mayor Rahm Emanuel did that, by the way. And it kind of juts out, and you get this beautiful shot of Oak Street and the Hancock Center and everything. And I just love to stand there and try to think, okay, when I click my fingers, it's 50 years from now. What does it look like? What does that scene look like?
But you know, actually,
100 years from
you remind me of something that's really interesting, because you know the Chicago Fire was one of the great boons to the city because it allowed Daniel Burnham to recreate the city.
Yeah.
So that it would be a great place for Negroes from the South and European immigrants to come together and work in the big factories in Chicago that no longer exist.
Hog
the whole
butchers.
Design of the city is for a world that has been gone for
it's
at least a couple
gone.
Of, a couple
yeah,
of
right,
decades.
Right.
At least a couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just interesting to think about what – and I think this is one of the big – problems of our brothers and sisters on the left, which is that people who there's been a failure to articulate a reasonable vision of the future.
Mm-hmm.
That really, it's one of the reasons I love Elon Musk is that making us a multi-planetary species is a wonderful vision that will require well-educated people and all, and it'll still
there's
keep,
an industry for that.
Yeah,
right, right,
it'll still keep McDonnell Douglas and Martin Marietta rich. They can still waste the money on space stations rather than wasting them on killing poor people in little countries.
You know, I just want to add to this the conversation we were having just now about, you know, the space probes and everything else. This is sort of like the last dying breath of the, you know, the baby boom generation's fascination with space exploration. Some of these things really do go back a couple of decades. And you know, we're kind of seeing the story today about the James Webb Space Telescope is it's really kind of the last of these big picture space ventures.
What can we learn, right?
Yeah. And that's
well, I wouldn't, you know, there is HAVOC, the high altitude Venus observational Venus orbital concept.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real live. You can look it up.
And you got your laser.
I thought you were going to say THAAD, but yeah.
NASA has got a real plan to build floating cities on Venus. So I mean, that's
okay.
Not, you know,
so, all right,
and,
right.
You know,
that's all I'm saying is we need to have that.
Oh well, this is why Elon Musk is my boy.
Right, Aaron Freeman, Ken Davis in studio tonight. We'll come back. We'll talk about what stories sucked us down the rabbit hole this week, and then we will continue reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman in studio. We're reloading this week's news, and we're to that point where we get to the in-depth stories. We've been pretty in-depth
this entire time. Can we just detour for one quick second? I just was looking out the window at all the fine people looking at us out here on Michigan Avenue, one of the great things about the WGN radio studio. And it reminded me that the Trump balloons got sort of approved, right?
Weird Trump pig balloons,
They're
going to put it in
balloons.
Front of, they're going to hang them in front of the Trump sign.
Right. Like
off
big
of Chicago River.
That will obscure the word Trump from the Michigan Avenue Bridge.
Such a weird thing.
It's so weird.
I'd consider that an act of kindness.
Right.
That's really a very sweet thing to do.
It's really an act of heart.
Selfless, right.
That's right.
Selfless.
Well, I mean, it spares
it's a
people.
Gift to the people of Chicago.
That's exactly right. A gift. And then they dye them green every St. Patrick's Day. The gold pigs are dyed green. I think that's a wonderful thing to do.
Wonderful.
Wonderful
idea.
Every year.
Yeah.
All right. So one of the what I had for underreported, but it also is a story that I had for the rabbit hole, was really surrounding about this concept of regulation. And we saw from the Agriculture Secretary, Sonny Perdue, this week's talked about two stories that I thought were kind of underreported, but also made me read more about. One was about sort of rolling back Michelle Obama's nutritional push for school lunches. Mm-hmm. So the idea that they weren't successful. The agriculture secretary is saying that the kids don't like it. It's too healthy. Essentially, is the idea. Yeah. It's too healthy, right? They don't like it.
Eat
so
your
broccoli. We're going to change it up so they can be more successful. This is what we've heard from school lunch ladies and people in the administration. We're going to change it up. The second one, which I thought was interesting, is Monday, coming up this Monday, was supposed to be the day that all menus across the country in any restaurant were going to have the calorie counts. Mm-hmm. We've seen some when you – and I didn't realize this because I'm like, well, I've seen that already. You go into Shake Shack over here. Yeah. You see it. Those are like that, volunteer.
Yeah.
They did it in advance because they're like, okay, we know this is coming.
Right.
We're going to just start doing it and get ahead of it. But the agriculture secretary, I think it was the FDA or USDA or whoever does that, rolled that back. And they said, we're going to put that on. And I think it was we're going to review that. That's the new thing. We're going to review that. We're not necessarily going to go with that. And when pushed, the argument was, well, you know what? Those calorie counts are one of the regulations that stand in the way of businesses being able to do what they need to do
make money by making you fat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's sort of the concept that I want to talk about. This idea, it's a little, I mean, I guess I get the concept. The concept being that when we talk about the word regulations, this is a great grand example of when Trump talks about regulations. This somehow, the calorie count stands in the way. The government goes in and stands in the way of somebody being able to sell something that's bad for you. And we've seen this argument with the oversized sodas and the cigarettes and everything in between. But there seems to be this strange sort of argument we continue to have in this country over what the government should be involved in and what they shouldn't be.
But it's not even close to just this country. I mean, Brexit, that's one of the things that Brexit and Frexit are about. The people, we don't like being ruled. We don't like rules. We don't like, I mean, since I was a little kid, I don't want that. I want the broccoli. I want dessert first. I don't want to have somebody tell me that I have to eat the ham hocks and collard greens first. I want to get straight to the pumpkin pie.
When I was in school, I hated gym. So could I have said, could I have said, President Trump,
I guess
please take gym away?
I kind of get the
like
that's the other thing, the contrast and the contradictions and the hypocrisy in a way too, because there's so many things that are considered regulations that fall into that category that would never be talked about being taken away. But then there's others that are. And I guess I just get confused and I don't know where we are when it comes to the idea of
That's why we have legislatures, right? Is to argue these things. I mean, look, we've been talking all night about the improvements that have happened in our lives, the incredible changes that have happened in our lives. Those things would have been seriously impeded if we didn't have a rule book, if there was not a set of standards. Think about, I don't know, the ADA. All right, look at that. I mean, you don't even think twice now about the fact that there should be ramps and there should be
curb cuts
and all the things that are elevators. I mean, the money we're spending to put elevators into L stations, and you know, we were talking about the Blue Line cutting down into the tubes.
But those are all public good. Those are the idea that if you control the street as a government, you should have it be accessible to all. We're talking about calorie counts
We're also talking about buildings having to retrofit for that too, and that's the private sector.
True.
See, so let's look at the Surgeon General report in whatever that was, 1960 or something. Right now, that's not even regulations. That's just the government taking the lead in research and saying we have a stake in the health of our people, and we are going to do this for the public good. Now I see even that stuff being attacked,
and you get
fast food people running the government. This is crazy.
Aaron, do you think there should be? It's needless to have calorie counts on menus in this country's restaurants?
I can tell you that Sharon Rosenzweig, the comic artist to whom I'm married and in love with,
name drop.
That's right. But she, I look, you got to cite your sources. Where I come from, I have guys at C2SC who fact check my jokes, okay? I mean, I'm telling you, you have no idea what it's like. It's like comedy inside this really tiny little box, and it's all got to be correct.
I'm sorry, Justin, I set him off. I'm sorry.
No. My right, only though. Point is that Sharon will only buy, and a bunch of folks out there and where I come from, there's a competitive advantage to providing as much information as you can. Because there are, as I said, right. I've had more informed conversations about food and eating and various theories about diet in the last 5 years than in the preceding 30. So that regulation is useful. But, you know, as an old Negro, I know that...
Someone texts in saying they're having a drinking game whenever you say that word.
Oh, well,
that's like the eighth time tonight. So really,
I know.
Anyway, all right. Keep going. As an old Negro, I can say that the laws changed after the culture did.
Right.
You know, it became politically expeditious to support civil rights after people had seen enough interracial couples, after people had seen enough of the television coverage of the Birmingham the bombings and the dogs.
Gay rights, same kind of thing.
Like, right. I mean, when Obama came into office, gay marriage was illegal in most states, and he himself was ambiguous. But the culture changed, and then
he evolved.
Yeah, and then he evolved.
But, I mean, there's something to be said that I feel like the culture, and maybe again, you know, it's just about, you know, we live in the big city and there's something to be said about, you know, I walk into the Starbucks across the street, I'm going to know what the calorie count is. It has changed my perception. I've educated myself in the way that I may not buy that mocha, you know,
right.
Frappuccino macchiato because I realized, man, that's 800 is bad. That's just a bad number. You know, like right off the bat, I don't even know what that means, but it's a bad number.
I don't want that one.
Right.
I don't want that much.
But there's something to be said about the idea that, you know, I feel like the culture has spoken. And so this is a situation where you're like, well, I don't understand why they would want to roll that back, except for the possibility that there is lobby that is trying to change the culture's
I think you're right on. That's exactly the point. Are parents of these kids who they see their kids like already starting to get kind of porky and they're saying, you know, this is not right. I know this isn't right. I don't really understand the science here, but I know something's wrong. And it looks to me like the government is helping me try to figure this out. And they're saying, we're not going to feed your kids a large Coke for lunch, right? That's not where the pressure is coming from. The pressure is coming from the people who make those sugary drinks.
Yeah.
And
right.
I'm not naming one company, but
and the farmers who grow the corn,
right? Absolutely, the farm lobby. My God, Illinois. That's those all we do is
those little family farms like Monsanto.
Those little family farms.
<That's right. laughs>
all those little family farms along I-57.
Right, yes. Bob Monsanto.
In a strange way. It goes back to the reason why, and I maybe we're wrong, but pundits have said that the Sir Trump phenomenon and winning an election, that he was sick and tired of what happens in Washington and the lobbyists taking care of their own interests and not the people's interests, and the people spoke and they want a non-politician. Yet he comes into office and I feel like, I don't know, I can't hear too many people speaking about getting rid of calorie counts.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
yeah.
things like that where you're like, well, wait a second. Is this not, you're listening to a lobby. I mean, we can even circle this back to healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, who's asking for, I mean, there are definitely horror stories out there about a bad system that's Obamacare, mm-hmm. but nobody's actually saying, you know what we should do? Get rid of the whole thing and just let the insurance companies
figure it out. Well, but also I would say that Obamacare nor Trump care change healthcare. I mean, the cost of healthcare, it didn't change healthcare at all. It changed health insurance. But, for example, in every field of which we are aware, technology has brought down the cost of those, as the cost of technology has dropped, except in healthcare.
Right.
Where the cost of machines.
Oh, my God. I had a bunch of dermatologists. I had like a thing on my eye, like a little cyst or something. You know, it's just, but it's like on the lid.
Yeah.
And they burned it off, and he's like, you know what? The pay for this is super expensive, you know, but if you do cash right now, blah, blah, blah. The point being that the number that they gave for the procedure was outrageous. I mean, it's thousands of dollars. And I'm like, wait a second. And so you're right. You're absolutely right. Health insurance is different than health
care. It's not the
same as health care.
Yeah.
But I know I haven't heard her, but you must have had Tony Preckwinkle on the show at some point, right? talking, I mean, have her give that speech about what Obamacare did for Cook County and for the thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who are insured in Cook County who were not insured before.
Yeah.
And the $300 million that it allowed to get back into her budget.
Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman, let's take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back, and then let's find out what story is going to be remembered this week from 5, 10, 15, 500 years from now. We're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news. Aaron Freeman, Ken Davis in studio tonight. Before we wrap up, I wanted to get to some of the texts that were coming through. 219 says, when are we going to go back to when people were responsible for themselves?
Oh, yeah. When was that? Was that 1943?
Well, I can't recall, in the Bible, Adam said, this woman you gave me made me eat. As I recall, that he didn't. That would be like the first human being wasn't doing
it.
But maybe there was some point in the middle.
He or she makes a good point. The idea of what we were talking about, like why does the government have to tell you not or tell me to not get the mocha frappuccino?
Well, I take issue with this whole notion, this whole Trumpian red hat thing of getting back to. We were never there. We have never been a responsible people. We have always been a greedy people who grab with both hands everything that we possibly can and stuff them into our pockets. That's just the way it is. There's nothing we can do about that.
Right.
And some people are able to behave in a way that they can then promote themselves as being responsible, and other people don't have the resources to do that, so then they get piddled on by the other people to say, you are not worthy because you are not responsible. That's the way it is. Sorry.
Well, as what Lenny Bruce said, you're entitled to any reaction to humans except surprise. that certainly is true. But I will say, though, in addition to being greedy and rapacious, we humans are also kind and generous.
We are.
And there's an evolutionary advantage to that, as Franz Deval talks about. That we're all a big mush.
We have
stuff.
Altruism. All of us have altruism in us.
Yeah.
Yes. It's the altruistic impulse that says, I want my government to be helpful. I want my government to help move us forward.
But it's also an altruistic instinct that says, I want to be free, and I want everybody to be free, and I want people to enjoy the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity. And depending on how you define liberty, depending on how you define freedom, you know, like I would say freedom from want, Roosevelt talked about the four freedoms. That's one way to do it. So now we can have a nice lexicological.
We need to regulate what
sounds
freedom
like,
means, right?
Sounds like a bunch of guys sitting around in Philadelphia in 17, whatever it was. They were saying the same thing. People are greedy.
If you ever do a podcast, right?
Yeah.
Or we do a regular segment, we should call it The Forefathers.
There you go.
Right? Ken Davis and Aaron Freeman, The Forefathers. 773
Mincing Rascals. That's
already taken. 773 says, and this was to the point about what Chicago is going to look like, and we talk about sort of realizing that we're right in the middle of human evolution. To give you an idea, this guy, he says, my oldest brother used to take us to the Prudential Building Observatory in the early 60s, and it was the tallest building in Chicago.
Yes.
I mean, that's only 40 years ago, and that's not even – I mean, does the Prudential Building even make the top 10 anymore?
Oh, no. Not downtown, downtown Chicago.
Not even in Chicago, no.
Yeah, not
wow.
in Chicago. No. But in the memories of old people –
Yeah.
it towers.
The Prudential Building has such I sound like I'm doing an architectural boat tour now or something, but you know, if you think about it, that was the first real modern post-war building to be built, and it kind of signaled that Chicago was going to be building, that it was going to be coming back. Those guys couldn't have imagined what Chicago would look like just what? It was 1955, so whatever that is, it's
hard to believe too. You know, I was just looking down. It's crazy in the West Loop, which is where I live, And I've learned a lot about the history of that area because Madison Street and what it was before. And, and my dad worked on in the 60s in the rail yards back there. So that, just understand. And then, you know, through my son's history classes, like I'm sort of like, let's go through the West Loop. Like Mary Todd Lincoln lived over there. There was a whole, there's been a lot of transformation in the city of Chicago in the West
Madison
Loop.
Madison Street was the slums. Yeah. Yeah. That was
And before that, there was.
Absolutely.
There was before that in some of those areas, it was very affluent. So like, there's like a very transformational period. But if you look now, and this blows my mind, you look down Sangamon or Peoria or any of those streets, and you see where Oprah's old Harpo studios were.
Right.
And you see, like, as far as the eye can see, cranes. There are crane, all working at the same time. I mean, today, driving around today, there was construction everywhere, fixing everything, and especially in that area. And it's just, I saw it, wow, this right away in my head, I'm like, the architectural makeup of this block is has changed. The the facades of those condo buildings that are going in, there's no longer that sort of, you know, art deco kind of Harpo Center like TV studio and that. And now the street doesn't look the same.
Yeah.
And you realize you're like, Chicago is changing.
Yeah, back in my day, you know,
back in 1996. Right?
You know, it is 1996 is a very interesting thing you mentioned because I was working for the city in those years and. Mayor Daley had this problem, right? He had lots and lots of money because he had TIF money and he was not giving money to the schools.
Robbing or the pensions.
Money,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. So he had lots of money.
and he got his convention, right? He wanted to have the convention here and he had it. But the problem was it was going to be at the United Center and they had to get people from downtown. And how did they do it? They redid...
I remember
Chicago
that.
Chicago Stadium.
The United Center.
Right, Randolph, right?
It was 96, yeah. It's the first year of the United Center.
All of that redoing of Randolph with the central planters and the streetlights and all that stuff. And
it was all because of the people who were coming to the convention were going to have to take cabs through that area.
That's right.
He wanted it to look good.
Right.
And so that was just a kind of a broken down. It wasn't slums anymore,
it was Randolph Market.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden those markets start turning into high end restaurants, and the next thing you know, it's all, you know, and that leads to Fulton Market and everything we see today. I don't know. Is it good or bad? I don't know. Seems good to me, but
yeah, I think it's interesting as you think about the idea that this city does change and we are, when we really think about it, just like the texter said and you guys said earlier, we're in our history is so small.
Yep.
And we're in this gradual turn, you know.
We're working here.
All right, last question tonight. What story from this week is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 500 years from now? Why don't we start with you, Ken Davis?
Well, actually, I have one that is about a two-hour conversation, but it's something that we did on our show this week, and it's just something that really sticks in my mind. It's the new unified high school application process.
So interesting.
I believe that in 10 years, it's going to completely transform the Chicago public school system because every kid in eighth grade is going to pick it's your choice, but you can pick up to eight high schools that you want to go to. So what's going to happen is there's going to be, again, we're talking this Darwinian thing, but you know, the city isn't going to have to close high schools. The kids are going to close them, the ones they don't like. And there's going to be more pressure to build better high schools, to improve the ones that were there. I'm real bullish on this. I think this is a good idea.
And it streamlines the process. A lot of parents were really angry at how convoluted everything was.
Absolutely.
And this changes it for the better. And it also, I mean, you hear all the time the pressure and the stress on parents and kids that are going into high school. And in a lot of ways, you see a little bit of flight where people are like, you know what, I'm out.
Can't
I'm just going to go to my suburb where I know where I'm going to high school.
You must have had Wendy Catton on the show at some time or another, right? Wendy Catton went to Evanston. So anyway, I think that's like a 10-year window, and I think it's going to have
that's
a profound effect. And I'll just do a real quick other one, again, not to even have a conversation about it, but in the 50-year window, net neutrality dying. There are going to be books written in the next 20, 30 years about these wonderful years between the 90s and the teens.
And this is an interesting story. I think this is a conversation. I know that you're big on this too, Aaron. The concept of the FCC, which has changed, under Trump, and you see with net neutrality, essentially this idea that you can't have fast lanes, or you regulate as if an internet company is a utility. Right. You treat it like the gas company. And the, of course, the lobby of the the internet companies don't want to be a gas company. They want to be able to do whatever they want, and they got their wish. The other thing out of that, which I just saw, and I thought this was so fascinating. This was just from yesterday. Stephen Colbert made a racy kind of sexist joke about Donald Trump. You look it up, and it's there. And he had to apologize for it. Mm-hmm. And it was one that was over the line, but it was funny. It was over the line. It was about Putin. And today, or it was yesterday, the FCC chair weighed in on it, saying whether or not they were considering an obscenity charge to Stephen Colbert. When's the last time the FCC chair got into that small potatoes?
Right.
Go back to George W. Bush and Howard Stern.
Mm-hmm. Howard Stern.
You know, but
the
point being that we have, it almost like it felt like we were getting out of the idea of regulating what everybody says, and you can't say, "Girl, you can't get much higher. Can you make that better?" You know, like, I mean, that this concept of, because the joke, I think the joke actually had a beep, right? Like, that was the joke, like he was doing this stuff. Yeah. But the point being that, like, when is the last time an FCC chair got into the weeds when it comes to a late night talk show host?
It is true. It is true. I certainly don't remember when it was.
Well, I, like I said, these are long conversations. We don't have time for it. But what really frosts me about this is how this conversation has been turned inside out, because the Obama administration said the internet should be a utility, that it should be essentially unregulated,
right?
We're not going to tell you, well, we're not going to tell you what we're going to tell you only is that you cannot do negative things. You cannot slow down the internet, that kind of thing, right?
Right.
The other side has come in and said, we want the internet, we don't want the internet to be regulated. We want it to be free. In other words, we want it to be free for Verizon and Comcast.
To do what they will.
Right. So, you know, this is, again, one of these things that will never
We'll have to get on that note. What do you got for the story that's going to be remembered?
Oh, well, I mean, I think the story that's going to be remembered and discussed in 500 years is the story that is being done by a radio station that shall not be mentioned, about violence occurring in Chicago every other hour. And I think that what's really one of the great leaps forward during my life has been the rise of reason. And to the extent that these guys are taking this phenomenon of violence that we just kind of go, oh, well, those people out there on the South Side and those people on the West Side are all just kind of... But these guys are really looking at violence in the city in a very systematic, rational kind of way. And certainly the problem of violence is something that we've been struggling with for a long time, but this was the most serious and systematic.
The idea that, I mean, they're really taking the idea, isn't it called every other hour?
Every other hour,
But the idea being that, every other hour there's violence in
Chicago. Yeah, and just the title alone, which was something I didn't actually know, and I've done a fair, but I do think that it contributes substantially, in my view, to this rise of reason and to the application of empiricism and cool, rational discourse to the problem of hot violence. And I applaud it, and I think that we may well look back at the beginning of this series as the beginning of a serious discussion about the violence in Chicago.
You guys are great.
You're really great.
We're really great.
So are you,
you guys,
Justin.
Are so great.
We're
You're
not
so
worthy
great.
Of you, Justin.
So great.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Ken Davis is the and the host of Chicago Newsroom on CanTV. Aaron Freeman is the artist in residence at the Chicago Council on Science and Technology, as well as the co-host of the upcoming podcast, Brain Buddies. Guys, thanks for being here. Got to come back. We'll do it again.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Yep. Yeah.